As we've mentioned previously, rates of vaccinations around the world have dropped, and this has let diseases like measles that we've heard about make a comeback. In 2017, 110,000 people died from measles, most of them children, which is a 22% increase on 2016. And the first 3 months of this year, there was a 300% increase on measles cases compared with the same period from last year.
But why are people turning away from vaccines? And what can we do to best convince them that vaccines are safe? We're joined in the studio by Sander van der Linden. So Sander, why do people have this distrust of vaccines and doctors? Where did it come from?
Well, I think it's really complicated. I think with vaccines, there are several causes. Some are political, so people see it as a threat to their individual freedom. Some are based around religion and values that people carry on within their culture and sort of religious circles. And sometimes people are just confused by misinformation that's being spread on the internet, often deliberately, that causes vaccine hesitancy. So I think it's useful to sort of distinguish between people who are vaccine resistant, and you can think of this as people high on the conspiracy spectrum and totally immune, so to speak, to the idea of vaccines. People who are hesitant about vaccines or just on the fence and may have been misinformed, and people who are currently not receiving vaccinations but who might consider doing so. So I think it's useful to try to consider different audiences because it's a complex issue and people have very differing motivations to not get vaccinated or to not trust the medical community.
So there's going to be some people we're going to really struggle to reach and others that we can convince more easily?
Exactly. So if you think about, for example, how people become vaccine hesitant, there's a lot of misinformation on the internet and social media, people hear about in their social circles, and so on. And so that's, you know, those are instances you might be able to correct and intervene. But when you talk about anti-vax communities, so communities that are isolated from the rest of society, that are very difficult to penetrate with factual information or scientific information. Communities who have become so entrenched where they're only receiving information from opinion leaders or religious leaders or even, you know, cult leaders, even when you get the facts in, they're not going to do much because people look around and you know, they follow norms and they see what the norm is, and the norm is not to vaccinate. So, you know, research shows physically painful for people to deviate from what the norm is often. And so even when, you know, these people are acquainted with the facts, that might just not be enough to convince people. So I think this idea of anti-vaccine communities that are isolated and marginalized are a separate issue from the sort of vaccine hesitancy as a result of misinformation.
Now, with the media and with social media, we see these views all the time. So are they really as widespread as they appear? How widespread are these views?
Well, I think it's difficult to quantify, but vaccine hesitancy is on the rise in most countries, and vaccination rates have dropped in Europe and elsewhere, and that is partly attributed due to vaccine hesitancy. We've seen some instances in the United States, in New York and California, where certainly misinformation has played an important role in fueling this. And to some extent, it's deliberate. So during the presidential election in the United States, there were Russian bots, this was called the Internet Research Agency, who were deliberately starting disinformation campaigns on vaccines, so floating pro and anti-vaccine information to try to get people confused on this very issue. And these were bots retweeting things on the internet. So I think that does play a role in heightening this this particular issue. And when people are concerned, uncertain about a variety of things, it's a good moment to try to, you know, drive a wedge between a lot of these issues. And not just vaccines, but also other issues people are unsure about, GMOs and things that are related to science and mistrust and so on. So I do think it's on the rise, and that's concerning.
So that makes it even more important to try and change people's minds, but we don't want to do that and make it things worse. So how do we debunk these myths effectively?
Yeah, you used an interesting word there, debunk. And so what we've been trying to do is find a new approach, which we call pre-bunking. So we know that debunking isn't as effective just because of the way the human memory works, right? When you've been exposed to a myth, that's what sticks in your memory. And every time you try to debunk it, you repeat it and you correct it. But what people remember is the myth and they forget about the correction. And so it's very difficult to effectively debunk these sorts of issues. So we try to essentially pre-bunk these things. And surprisingly, or perhaps unsurprisingly, we follow a vaccination metaphor with the idea of pre-bunking. So it's called psychological inoculation. So it works the same way. You expose people to a weakened dose of the myth, of the misinformation, not so strong that you persuade people, weak enough to not overwhelm your sort of psychological immune system, but weak enough that it sounds ridiculous for people and that you can sort of allow people to build mental antibodies to the misinformation so that when they're actually exposed to it, they're much more resistant to actually believing it. And we do this in a variety of settings. For example, we've done it in the context of climate change. We do it by exposing the techniques that underlie most misinformation, including vaccines, so things like conspiracies and polarization. And what we do is we preemptively try to acquaint people in a controlled environment with the main techniques that are being used so that people learn about them. And then when it actually happens, people can hopefully spot the techniques that are being used and recognize misinformation when it's being deployed and be less resistant to it. And we've tried to test that online through a game we've developed, a social impact game to help to try to educate people and engage audiences. And we found some positive results with that so far. So the idea is to prevent is better than cure. And I think the same is true for misinformation. If you can get ahead of it, that's better than trying to correct things after the fact.
Now, when we're talking about vaccines, we're talking about children's health. It's a more emotive issue than, say, climate change. Does that change how we have to approach these issues?
Well, certainly. I think what we know from experiments is that if I tell you that vaccines are safe, or if a doctor tells you that vaccines are safe, but then subsequently you come across a picture of the internet of a child, you know, a doctored image of a child that's suffering from a side effect of vaccines, that totally trumps your, you know, sense of science and your belief in the scientific consensus. So I think that is an extremely important factor to think about, is that emotions do play a very big role in when people think about their children and putting their children at risk. And I think communicating ways that resonate with people other than just cold facts is what's needed here. So when you talk to parents about vaccines, I think you also have to talk about safety in experiential terms for people and not just facts, because otherwise one side is just relaying sort of cold facts to people and the other side is trying to appeal to people's emotions, and that is an unfair debate.
There's been some talk lately of making vaccines compulsory and undercutting this whole distrust issue. Where do you stand on that? Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, I think it's a really complex idea. I mean, I'm a psychologist, not a politician, of course. But what we do know is that when you start making people do things they don't necessarily want to do or consent to, it can actually backfire and decrease trust and marginalize people further. So I understand there's an important balance here to try to protect people's lives and to save lives and to not let, you know, other groups of people put others at risk. But then there's also the very real risk of having people further entrenched in their beliefs, further marginalized in their communities, and lower trust of government further because you're making people do things. So I think maybe one thing to think about is the best way of going about this and how to communicate this and how to get people on board within those communities that will approve to these sort of mandatory plans that are currently being discussed.